Chinook, it's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaskan natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into native heritage.
How things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profiles, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskan.
This is Chinook Patterns. I'm Paula Schiller. In December, two researchers from the Institute of Social and Economic Research presented the results of a two-year study on the effects of oil and gas development in the North Slope borough. The report of their findings has just found its way into the newspapers, and it seems like a good time to bring you this conversation recorded some months ago. I'll be talking to Jack Cruz and Judith Kleinfeld, the authors of the report.
There's going to be a lot of oil and gas development occurring in Alaska. The Outer Continental Shelf Program means that development may occur in many regions along the coast. The native regional corporations are looking at the possibility of developing oil and gas and other resources on native lands. Yet, people don't know much about what the effects of all this development is going to be on people, on their incomes, on their lives. Villages are asked to make decisions about whether they want oil and gas drilling on their properties. They're asked to make these decisions right away with very little knowledge of what's likely to happen. The purpose of this study was to find out what had already happened on the North Slope, where so far there's been the most intense development activities, as a guide for people elsewhere.
Now, from looking at oil and gas development in the lower 48 on native lands or around where native lands and native issues were involved, you had expected to find certain negative effects, I think, of oil and gas development. There were certain assumptions that were made.
In other Indian areas where energy development has occurred, oil and gas, uranium, coal, the general opinion has been that the people did not benefit. First of all, the tribal governments rarely got as much for their resource as it was worth. Second of all, the employment that people expected just didn't materialize. And when people did get employed, there were just a few high-paying jobs. So the result of it was that everybody wasn't well off. Rather, a small group of people benefited, and the majority of people might be even relatively worse off than they were before energy development. That's led to the formation of new organizations like the Council of Energy Resource Tribes, which is trying to find out how tribes can manage energy development so that their people benefit.
So with that knowledge of what had happened in the past, and one of the things that I noticed in looking over some of the research results and listening to a rather formal presentation that you made, was that the resource development created an income gap, and that's what you were talking about, that a few people may have gotten higher wages or more income from this, and other people have been left out.
That's right. Not only in Indian lands, but also in developing countries in Africa and Asia, generally what happens with development is that the gap between the poor and the rich in the country increase. It's not a question of everybody getting better off. Then also, this increased income inequality creates social problems.
Mm-hmm. And I don't want to anticipate too much, because I'm not sure I'm going to be interpreting what I heard and what I read correctly. So if I make a misstatement, let me know. But as I understand it, you didn't find what you expected or what the negative effects were not similar on the North Slope as they were to the experience in the...
The effects on the North Slope were very different from those that have been found elsewhere. It's certainly the case that income went up and the income gap did not increase. A large proportion of the population on the North Slope, of the Eskimo population, received financial benefits from oil and gas development. That's not to say that the experience as a whole was a good thing. Mm-hmm. People were ambivalent about it, but at least the employment benefits and the income benefits that were expected came about on the North Slope, and they have not come about elsewhere.
That was one thing. The other aspect is the question of social problems. It seemed that from your initial findings that there were social problems, but perhaps not as a direct result of oil and gas development, as had been reported by the Klausner and Folks study, the University of Pennsylvania famous report that said that literally blamed oil and gas development for mass alcoholism on the North Slope.
That's right. That report said that what was happening on the North Slope because of oil development was, first of all, it was creating two classes of people, one who could manipulate symbols of Western culture and who were gaining from oil development, and then a large class of other people who weren't prepared to manipulate Western society. It was forming two classes, and all the social unrest was creating massive alcoholism, suicide, and other problems. Well, we were very surprised at that analysis because our survey just didn't show that income inequality was occurring or that two classes were being created on the North Slope. So we went back and did some additional analyses of alcoholism and suicide rates. Our results are very different from that report. They indicate that certainly alcoholism is a big problem on the North Slope, and the community knows that and has recognized it for years. And certainly suicide and homicide and other forms of traumatic death are problems and growing problems. However, it just doesn't seem reasonable to say that oil development caused this problem. These problems have been increasing since the 1960s. And the rate at which they increased in the 1970s when oil development occurred was not any higher than the rate in the 1960s.
Now that we've heard some of the research results, let's turn to Jack Cruz, who can tell us about how the data for the report was compiled. He used a survey asking North Slope residents a number of questions relating to life before and after Prudhoe.
We were particularly interested in looking at how people's activities have changed and also their perceptions, and we wanted to be able to talk about all of the North Slope population. And since it's virtually impossible to talk to everyone in depth, we chose a survey format where we randomly selected residents to talk to. Essentially, we talked to a person in each household in the smaller villages on the North Slope, and a person in 50% of the households in Barrow.
Native households or just random households?
Well, we actually talked to non-native residents as well, but we did eliminate from our sample those people who lived in what we call institutional housing,
FAA.
Like the FAA and the borough's teacher housing and that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. However, all of the results that we've been talking about so far just applied to the native respondents in our survey.
Okay. What questions did you ask them in this door-to-door endeavor?
Well, the interview took about an hour, so it was a long interview. And one out of five of the interviews were conducted in Inupiaq. The questions started off with subsistence activities and what people are doing as far as hunting and fishing and native crafts. They then turned to employment activities, wage employment activities, and followed that by people's perceptions of how their communities have changed. And then an important set of questions for our research were what people's background characteristics and experiences have been, so that we might relate those to how people have chosen different patterns of living and subsistence and wage employment. So as Judy has talked about in terms of employment, that the formation of the borough on the North Slope was really the key in setting the North Slope experience apart from the experiences in the lower 48 with energy development, and that most of the employment that Judy was referring to came directly through the North Slope borough as opposed to employment at Prudhoe Bay, for example.
So with oil and gas development, people were not getting jobs with the oil companies, they were getting jobs with their own government.
That's right. The North Slope Borough was very important in providing employment to all groups. It employed large numbers of women. It employed large numbers of young people. In fact, 75% of the jobs that were held by people from 18 to 24 went through the borough. The oil industry itself employed very few natives, and those that were employed worked for a short period of time. That's been the experience outside Alaska. That was the experience in Alaska with the Trans-Alaska Pipeline. But as Jack pointed out, what made the experience on the North Slope different was that there was a borough, and the borough provided local jobs, high-paying jobs, and it adapted the jobs to the cultural conditions. For example, people could get subsistence leave if they wanted to go hunting and fishing.
So what then might separate the North Slope borough's experience with the oil and gas development or energy development and the experience in the Lower 48 is that the Lower 48 didn't have a borough government.
It may be a little more complicated than that. The borough, its whole activity program is based on the fact that it can tax the developments at Prudhoe Bay and the pipeline, mm-hmm. so that virtually all the revenues, or over 75% of them anyway, come from the tax, the property tax at Prudhoe Bay. There are other forms of local government in the Lower 48 that of course can tax, but that's generally not true on reservations. So while that's an important area that might be changed, or people are looking to change in the Lower 48, surely up here, the borough in general as a form of government is only really viable when there's a large tax base to support it. So, for example, we can't really expect to see boroughs being formed in other rural areas of Alaska before some enough development occurs to support that borough government.
So it's it's kind of a circle. But if you want to...
That's right, it does really make it complicated.
The borough has to either... it sustains itself with the tax revenue, but then again, in the interest of subsistence and for just protection of the environment, it may want to limit oil and gas activity.
And that's been an important program of the borough, actually, is to try to control the development so that wildlife resources are not threatened by it. So while they, on the one hand, need the development from the point of view of providing the money to provide the services in the villages, at the same time, they actually need that money to exert influence over the industry itself to try to limit its activities in sensitive areas.
One of those sensitive areas is subsistence. We'll hear more about that and the problems and benefits of oil and gas development on the North Slope from researchers John Cruz and Judith Kleinfeld on our next program. I'm Paula Schiller, and this is Chinook, a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.
Chinook, it's a warm wind.
It's a changing wind.
Chinook, a program for and about Alaska Natives.
Chinook Echoes is looking back into Native heritage.
How things are and how they got that way.
Chinook Patterns is information.
Issues that affect the patterns of Alaskan life.
Chinook Profiles, portraits of people, places, events.
But mostly the people who are Alaskan.
This is Chinook Patterns. I'm Paula Schiller, with the second part of a conversation with researchers Judith Kleinfeld and Jack Cruz. They did a study on the effects of oil and gas development in the North Slope Borough. And last time we looked at some of the findings which indicated that the pattern of employment and social stratification is different on the North Slope from what might have been expected by looking at situations in the Lower 48. The researchers say that in some aspects, the North Slope's experience has been better, and that has been due in part to the formation of the North Slope Borough. Also, a cash and wage economy is often presumed to replace subsistence activities, but that's not necessarily so, says Jack Cruz.
it was with the borough's policy of allowing people to leave for subsistence purposes, and because of a high turnover rate on jobs, for example, among men, it was possible to do both, really largely to the same extent that occurred before. Hmm. So we found that participation rates in various hunting and fishing activities were very high, including among those who worked quite a lot on the borough projects.
So what I hear sometimes coming from people that for one reason or other say that now that they're getting such high wages on the North Slope and they can buy food in the stores that they don't need to depend on subsistence and they don't pursue these subsistence activities that they used to. That's not what you're finding.
Yeah, one common perception is that the North Slope people are now rich.
Mm-hmm.
And while their incomes have increased, as Judy pointed out, they've been hit by inflation as everyone else has, and their incomes have grown even accounting for increased cost of living. But it's interesting to compare the average amount of money that an individual person on the North Slope gets with the average amount of money that an individual, say, in Fairbanks gets. And in the year of our survey, the difference was really dramatic, about $4,000 per person on the North Slope versus about $11,000 per person in Fairbanks.
Mm.
So you can see that the need for subsistence products really has remained on the North Slope despite the growth in income.
What about the borough's capital improvements program? That's something that when I was in Barrow was both applauded and sometimes maligned in the same breath, that indeed they were putting lots of money into the borough and creating jobs and putting people to work. But then again, some people living in borough housing and that were benefiting thought that maybe too much money was being spent too fast.
I think that's an area that we found the most ambivalence or mixed feelings among the North Slope population. On the one hand, they would like to see their community have new services. There's certainly a sore need for new housing, for example, for safe water supplies, mm-hmm. and waste disposal facilities, for recreation facilities, and so forth. On the other hand, they like, as we all do, to live in a community where you're sharing similar values and ideas and lifestyles with your neighbors. And many people perceived that as these new services were being provided very quickly and a lot of construction was going on, that a great many people from outside the North Slope were being brought in to help provide these services. And so the communities felt essentially as if they had less in common with some of their neighbors than before. And some perceived that they would rather have a slower rate mm-hmm. of development and keep their communities more homogeneous, more of the same lifestyles and people than having a lot of outsiders come in.
So it's a reaction not so much to the amount of money or to the quality of the services as to the rate at which things are changing.
No, yeah, because people's perceptions of the quality of services, the ones that the borough was addressing, were very positive. They saw the increased quality of schools and healthcare and so forth.
What were some of the other feelings that the Inupiat had about the benefits and costs, about village life and the quality of their existence?
Well, as I mentioned, they had generally very positive perceptions of how conditions had changed in the areas of housing, health care, schools, and air transportation, which was really an indirect effect of the borough's activities and activities at Prudhoe Bay. They felt that there were very negative changes in terms of the amount of fish and game available, but they didn't necessarily attribute that directly to oil and gas development. In part, it was because the Western Arctic caribou population had crashed about the same time, and the state had put severe regulations on caribou harvest. So people were very sensitive to that during the time of our survey. They also saw a worsening of conditions in terms of drinking and use of drugs and fighting in the villages, and they perceived that as being quite poor as a as an overall element of their village life. On balance, though, most people still felt that village life was good. I guess somewhat more people felt that village life had changed for the worse than people who said village life had changed for the better.
Hmm.
So I guess that really shows the mixed feelings of, on the one hand, employment benefits, mm-hmm. New services, and on the other hand, a higher cost of living and problems with fish and game resources.
When you find something like that that is mixed, and presumably the borough wants to respond to what the people want, how can somebody take something like that and direct their activities to accomplish both?
The survey identifies some of the areas where the borough has accomplished a great deal. The area that people were most satisfied with was making good jobs available. They felt the borough has done a real good job there. Now the issue is just how to keep on, how to maintain mm-hmm. those local jobs, because if the borough's revenues drop and the jobs go away, people could be in bad shape. They've grown accustomed to good local jobs. The survey also pointed out area where the community feels life isn't so good and where the borough could direct more efforts. Mm. The big one was social problems, the alcoholism, drinking, and fighting. The borough has already had alcoholism programs and a sleep-off center through which it's started to work on these problems. It shows where more is needed. However, one of the problems in looking at survey results is to think, well, things changed during the 1970s, and oil and gas happened in the 1970s. Therefore, it was oil and gas that made things bad. That really isn't what the survey shows at all. In fact, most research nationally shows a pattern. When you ask people how things were 10 years ago, they say, well, better than today.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, at least in the past, when you ask, and how will things be 10 years from now, and they say, better, there's a kind of optimistic expectation. Now that's changing, though. Because of inflation, people are much less secure that the future is going to be better. So I think, in part, you have to look at what the Barrow people and the North Slope people are saying as what many people say, that it was better in the good old days.
I think it's probably going to be the same anywhere.
Jack, maybe you could go over the findings in Fairbanks, because I don't remember them closely enough. But wasn't there something about people feeling that the pipeline was generally bad and yet they sure wanted more fast?
Yeah, so Judy's referring to a study that we did prior to our work on the North Slope, where we're looking at an urban area, which was Fairbanks. And we asked people many of the same questions. And their responses were essentially that most people felt like they were bearing more of the costs of change than they were receiving the benefits, despite the fact that there was a similar pattern of many people, most people's incomes rising fairly dramatically, and the experience that we all know. But we also asked, would you like to see the gas pipeline come through Fairbanks? And there was a resounding yes. I guess one of the hardest problems that people look at during this course of change to address is the one on access to lands around the village or the community, as in the case of Fairbanks, where in Fairbanks people saw a permanent loss in being able to go out and use the land for hunting or fishing or house logs or what have you. And I think that on the North Slope there's a similar perception of a narrowing of area that people can use for those purposes, or increased pressures on those mm-hmm. resources and more competition. The borough has tried to address those in the form of zoning, or trying to say which lands can be used for which purposes, or changing the federal government's policies for oil exploration, but they've had limited success, as you can imagine.
So I was thinking about some of the things that the borough has done. I'm wondering how much you could determine were decisions of planning on the part of the borough that, or was it just fortuitous that they supplied the jobs and the, managed to spread out the income, and that they've spread out their capital improvements borough-wide rather than concentrating it? Are these things that they just happened that way, or was it part of? Is it part of a plan?
Well, I think it's definitely part of a plan. The borough, soon after it was formed, with consultants' help and through the assembly and the mayor's office and so forth, established what they call the Capital Improvements Plan, which was a program of activities. And so that really scoped out what kinds of activities would occur and where they would occur. And as you can imagine, there was a lot of pressure from each of the villages on the North Slope to get their fair share of the activity, whether it's housing or schools or what have you. And so the jobs, in that sense, were planned as well. That was an important part of the capital improvements program. It wasn't just to provide new housing and schools, but to provide the jobs that would come in building them and operating them.
How about the question of running out now? Is that pertain to any of the questions you asked or any of your findings that now that things have leveled off or people are worried that the eventually an end to Prudhoe Bay, how to sustain the?
I've referred to it before as a high-stake poker game, that the money's there now, the needs are there now, the borough has chosen to use the money to meet those needs, and I suspect there could be severe problems if all of a sudden that money disappeared, or even if it disappears in 15 years, as people are talking about. Mm-hmm. So I think the borough has taken a risk, but it's a conscious one. It wasn't one that they're going into with their eyes closed. And I think what will happen will in large part depend on whether new sources of revenue are found on the North Slope and whether the borough can exploit those sources.
How about the overall picture that you've given us, the findings, but it seems to have mixed messages? I'm wondering how you feel about it.
I have tremendous admiration for the Inupiat as to how they took advantage of this opportunity. They might not have chosen, if they'd had the choice, for a complex to be built at Prudhoe Bay or the pipeline to go through Alaska. Many Alaskans have mixed feelings about that, but it was going to happen, and the question was how to turn it to their benefit. And my own view has been that they've been extremely successful in getting the benefits from this development and not increasing their levels of social problems any higher than would have occurred without it. I think it's a real tribute to the people. They've accomplished a great deal.
Judith Kleinfeld and Jack Cruz of the Institute for Social and Economic Research, they discussed some of their findings on a study on the effects of oil and gas development on the North Slope. I'm Paula Schiller, and this has been a production of KUAC-FM at the University of Alaska in Fairbanks.